Wondrous, which means it's time for the weather forecast for Lincoln from Lincoln with Shaley McKenzie.
So the weather for today, guys, it's going to be a dry, chilly morning with some sunny spells and showers in the afternoon, with highs of 8 degrees and lows of 3 degrees.
Check out the online interviews, audio postcards, and more from the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Often been said that the more complex the minds, the greater the need for the simplicity of play. And with the Teufer in its 65th year, yes, 65 years since it launched in Brighton a wee while ago, it's a delight to be able to welcome Roland Earl from indeed the Teufer at Olympia in London. Welcome to the programme, Roland. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. I must admit, I was surprised, but it's understandable that I see on the My Toy Fair blog site, we have the notion that children between the ages of 5 and 15 are regrettably not permitted entry into the show. And it's understandable, because at the end of the day, some of these toys, they're too good to allow children to play with. Let's face it.
I wish it weren't so, but unfortunately, it's a trade event, this particular event. But of course, at the end of the day, the real consumer is the child.
Well, that's true, but as many a parent will actually say, we've got to test them out first just to check the things are sorted out on that basis. You've got over 270 toy companies showcasing their toys at this event in Olympia, which, as I say, is running really ideally from the 25th through to the 23rd to the 25th of January. So we're right in the middle of the whole thing now. Are there any trends that are kind of emerging? I mean, is it a case of, are we going back to the day of saying, give them a hoop, that's all they need, just a hoop, and you know, maybe a stocking top or something?
Well, it's a very interesting point. I mean, one of the things which is always very surprising at Toy Fair is, we have a lot of new inventions. You wouldn't think after all these years of making toys that there really would be anything else that could be made that's new. That's not the case at all. There's a whole mixture of what one might call traditional toys, as you mentioned, hoops and marbles and board games and all of those sorts of things. And then in amongst those, there are innovations with those. So there are marbles that do things, as well as you can play with them as marbles, they do something else. You've got cars that interact with you. You've got all the kinds of things that I might have played with as a child, plus a whole bunch more. Obviously, apps are important, and technology has become cheaper to use and smaller to use within small toys. So there's always new and innovative ways toy makers can think of adding a bit more fun to something that was good anyway, but gives you another hook to it, really.
Back in the day, of course, there was the suggestion that you could determine a child's entire future psychology as to whether they went for Lego or for Meccano. It was a critical thing. And in these days of science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics and so on, the STEM subjects and so on.
Absolutely.
Is there a sense that actually educational toys are selling well? Are they promoting well? Or is it a case of you've got to get that balance between fun and learning that actually good toys will have as a matter of course?
Well, it's a very good question. On the question of educational toys, my view, and you won't be surprised to hear that, is that all toys are educational in the sense that kids pick up things like socialising with each other, interacting with each other, learning how to physical coordination, hand-eye coordination, all those types of things by playing with almost any toy. But also there are toys, of course, that are there primarily to sort of help teach you something in a fun way. So that category of toys, where whether it's mathematics or language or whatever, is a good category in the sense that if it engages a child in a subject that they may have maybe found slightly uninteresting or whatever, maybe in a fun way, then it might invigorate their interest. And there's certainly, you mentioned STEM toys, and I know that it's now called STEAM toys, but the science and technology and engineering and mathematics, yes, that is an area of interest, and there are quite a lot of toys that do that, perhaps a little bit more than there were, say, 5 years ago.
As artificial intelligence continues to permeate society, are toys getting clever? Are they getting smarter? Are we now seeing teddy bears which actually walk and talk and do all manner of other bits and pieces? Kind of an improvement from the days where a basic doll might say, mamma, etc.
Yes, I would say that is true, and that is a feature of the miniaturisation of technology and the fact that it's easier to put chips into things. Toys, of course, range in size quite dramatically, so although there are very large toys like ride-on toys and those sorts of things, there are also very small collectible toys as well. But even with, say, a ride-on toy, I mean, a company from the Midlands called MV Sports have just launched a fire truck for small children that even has a bubble machine so that you can put the fire out with the bubbles sort of thing. So, even in something which you think, well, that's a ride-on toy, that's something that kids play around in the garden, that has some technical features which wouldn't have been possible a few years ago.
There are lots of accolades, of course. It is a trade show. You got best toy, you got best new toy and so on. Is it a bit like the Academy Awards in terms of the toy makers industry, where they sort of turn around and say, today the best new toy is?
Yes, it is. It can be a bit, but nobody gets it right. That's one thing that's always true. Everybody thinks they know what's going to be the best selling toy in any one year, and they have their predictions around now, and then by about September, October, it's all changed, and it's really down to children in playgrounds, in my view. They talk about what they like, and it's a fashion business, and things change quite markedly throughout the year. There's always something new coming up. So today's the day when the fair started, and it's the day when the exhibitors will be showing their new range of products, their full range, to interested retailers and e-tailers.
A couple of weeks ago, we were at the London Boat Show. I really must look to add next year's Toy Fair, because I feel as I should be there. I should be actually sort of looking at these kind of wonderful things in action. Any particular favourites from yourself? I mean, as you wander around the hall, as you see the sort of range of things that are actually there, is there something which you kind of sometimes you just can't keep your hands away from? You say, I've got to play with that.
Well, it's a very good question, and I'm not sure I'm really allowed to answer, because as you said, we have hundreds of exhibitors here, all with thousands of products. But certainly when I was a child, I enjoyed plastic animals, so I always look out for those, because I enjoy playing. Well, I always think that I'll become a zookeeper when I finish this job anyway. Not that that's highly unlikely, but it would be nice. But certainly some very clever building toys, some nice a toy from a company called Clementoni, which does it's a toy where you build a robot. And you can choose various different robots to build, so it gives the child a chance for creativity as well as following instructions. And I think that's nice. I think it's nice that you have something that you can do, but you put a toy in the hands of a child and let their imagination run with it.
And inevitably, we look at the influence of mass media. Are there lots of toys that are influenced by Star Wars, by media images, just as obviously a few years ago, Tracy Island was a massive selling toy?
Absolutely. So that is an important part of the industry. Movie licenses, TV, even licenses that come direct from the internet these days as well, and also books as well. I mean, we have a nice range of Roald Dahl games by a company up in Enfield in North London, which is a Fiesta Crafts. That's a nice little range. So it's not just films, although films are very important. Paddington Bear, and as you say, Star Wars, and also TV, but also books can be good licenses as well.
Gerry Anderson and Disney obviously lead the way as far as that's concerned, but that's another issue. Presumably you start planning for the 2019 Toy Fair pretty much on the 26th of January once this one has wrapped.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a never-ending process. It's the time of year when obviously toy sales are at their highest in the run-up to Christmas, so the period in January gives chance to people to sort of showcase new ranges for not just Christmas in the following year, but also the summer toys that are coming up if we get a nice summer in 2018, which I hope we do.
Well, without wanting to suggest our listener will be a bit like a child with their nose pressed up against a toy shop window, presumably toyfair.co.uk is the best place to go to find out further details about the event and catch some images of what's going on at the event as well on social media too.
Absolutely.
It's been a genuine delight touching base with your good self, Roland. As I said, hopefully next year we're looking to come down and actually see you in person.
I hope,
wonderful.
I hope you do. We'll still be here. Thank you very much,
Roland,
indeed.
Many thanks indeed. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Actually finding joy in your work, being happy in your work, these are issues which have actually plagued humanity since Socrates and Aristotle were actually talking about the need for dedication and so on. And it seems that when we look at the United States of America and Britain these days, there's still a different approach to work. Maybe it would seem that the US workforce is officially happier than the UK, according to new transatlantic research by Jobbio. We'll find out about that and more over the next few moments, because we're delighted to welcome, first of all, the Chief Executive Officer Officer of Jobbio, Stephen Quinn. How are you, Stephen?
Good morning. Yeah, very well. Thanks, Alex.
And the Head of Content and Employer Branding at Jobbio. That would be a fabulous Dee Murphy. How are you, Dee?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Excellent. Stephen, if we can come to you first with respect to the research that this revealed. I mean, it's often said that customer service in Britain is very, very weak in all senses of the word. America tends to beat us for that. But it seems as though, even though they're not necessarily taking as many holidays as we have in the United Kingdom, folk in the United States are broadly far more positive and happier in their work lives.
Yeah, it seems that way. So, we did a geo-split on the research. So we interviewed the same amount of people in both across a number of industries. And it turns out that the Americans are slightly happier, even though they do get stuff like they don't take as many holidays. They don't have as many perks. But actually, for whatever reason, their outlook is brighter.
Yeah, presumably, unless they're working in the White House, but that's another political situation which we won't
go
into.
Could be a happy
stage.
Place, you never know.
It could well be. It could be sort of just full of happiness and so on. I mean, Dee, from your own perspective, what was behind the notion of actually looking at what our cousins in America are getting up to, as opposed to, for instance, you know, our folk in Europe or indeed in the Far East and Asia and so on?
I think that there's a general understanding or a kind of a preconception that because America have a very different attitude towards work and working hours and people's flexibility in the workplace and their work-life balance, that we actually get it right on this side of the pond. And the UK falls very much into line with workplace practices across Europe, whereas in the US, obviously, it's a different ilk. So we thought that we'd get actually a stronger element of contrast in our favour, in favour of the UK rather than the US. So the results were quite surprising to us. But we thought that there would be a nice contrast because the approaches to work are so different between the UK and the US.
It's interesting that a few months ago we were talking about artificial intelligence making 50% of all jobs obsolete by 2040. And it seems that most British people have actually believed, certainly if they're in the travel industry, if they're telemarketing, factory workers or shop assistants, that effectively, well, what's the point? Because it's a machine that's going to take over in a few years in any case.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And actually, that point is interesting. It may or may not be a part of it. But in the US, they're actually at the forefront. They're up front and centre when it comes to developing the innovative AI that's actually going to transform the workplace in general. So maybe partly because they're on the front line of creating that kind of AI that they feel more engaged with it and less fearful of it.
But people seem very, what's really interesting is the stuff that the machines can't do. So the creative industries, the, you know, that stuff, that the human-led stuff is, people are very positive about that. So yeah, if I was a truck driver, I'd be nervous because of auto trucks. But maybe if I'm in advertising, I'm very happy because computers don't do ideas.
The discerning ear might just detect a slight flavour of the Emerald Isle with both your good souls, actually, Steve and Andy. Presumably, are you from the Republic of Ireland or the North of Ireland?
We're from the Republic.
From the Republic. Now, yes. Now, let's look. So what's the situation there? Because, I mean, it's always struck me out of wearing, you know, my McCormick family background from Sligo and Ballinafad, etc. There's a kind of intrinsic optimism there. Is that, you know, something that you see that, you know, somehow maybe Ireland is like that middle ground between Britain and America?
We're just delighted with life over in Ireland.
Yeah, we're somewhere in the middle, aren't we?
We're
the centre of the world, aren't we?
Oh.
No. Listen, we're I think Irish people have a very positive outlook all of a sudden as well. So obviously we had a very rough couple of years over the course of the recession, but actually we're bouncing back fairly well. Brexit's been kind of good for us at the moment, so it's interesting time, yeah.
Allowing for the notion that ultimately we create our reality through our own thoughts, what's the best way to actually go about from employers if they're looking to change the mindset that their workers had, other than simply saying, you will be happy, otherwise we'll sack you?
Yeah, well, I think the research is fairly evident here that people are much more focused on time, right? So time is actually more important than money to a lot of people, and progress in their jobs and feeling, valued, right? So the research, like the benefits that people talk about is actually about work-life balance versus, you know, pay rises and bonuses, especially in the UK. So actually giving, I suppose, the talent or your employees more freedom to excel in their roles is actually more important to keeping them happy than maybe paying them more to do stuff that they don't want to do.
Well said.
Is it fair to say that folk, when they're looking for the right job for them, maybe when they've graduated or maybe when they've spent a few years out of higher education and they're still kind of getting a portfolio of work together, sometimes they might have to go through jobs and experiences maybe that will lead on as stepping stones to the career or the job of their dreams?
Yeah, actually, it's just such a great point. Like, I think that, you know, society's in a bit of a rush these days, and you don't have to get your perfect job immediately. You can build towards, attaining that perfect role. So, you know, people are going, learning skills in different type of companies and then working their way towards getting their perfect role, right? So, and companies are allowing that. They're giving younger people freedom to learn because people are more transient now. So you're not just going into a job where you have to stay for life. You're actually able to spend a couple of years learning the trade versus, I don't know, university. And then, of course, the world is your oyster then when you have a work experience.
And in terms of that whole notion of employer branding and so on, what's your advice in terms of looking at ensuring that, you know, people are given the best opportunities to promote themselves, presumably go to the Jobbio website?
Absolutely, that should be your first port of call. And I think our website actually takes a really good approach to it because we enable companies to tell their story by building out channels, which is actually the most important part of employer branding, is to pitch to your audience the most authentic view of yourself as a company, so as you're attracting the right people for the right reasons. So platforms like ours enable companies to build their employer brand, which is key to getting the right talent. Mm.
Which is very much the win-win situation from that point of view. Stephen, let's share the website of Jobbio. Is it jobbio.com? Is that the best place to go to?
Yeah, jobbio.com, and you can download our app. You'll find thousands of companies showcasing themselves, trying to find great people. So that's where you're able to go, build a professional profile, privately apply to roles that instantly that are a right fit for you. So it's a good start.
And just looking ahead to the future, can we see a situation whereby this side of the Atlantic will eventually be more positive than our American cousins, or is it simply a case of, well, America, oh bless them, they're always going to actually be strangely positive in their own weird ways?
Is there going to be a change in the weather? Maybe something to do with that. Potentially, I think. I think British people are very positive. I don't know where all this dare talk is coming from.
We appreciate that and we will maintain that. Two final things. Have you had a reasonably interesting and indeed enjoyable telephonic link with us this morning? This is our customer satisfaction thing. Stephen and Dee, has it been okay for you guys?
Am I talking to a computer? Or is radio?
Are you AI?
I'd have to take the Turing test and I'm not sure where we'd stand on that one, but that's a whole different area. Can we prevail upon you both to join us later on in 2018 and keep us aware of the extra work you're doing with Jobbio and more? Will you return?
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely, definitely.
Chief Executive Officer of Jobbio, Stephen King. Stephen Quinn, I should say.
Exactly. Please just call him Stephen Quinn.
Third time lucky.
And Stephen Quinn. I should clearly have actually thought about the joys of Niall Quinn and other sort of well-known sort of connections with that body. And the awesome Dee Murphy. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.
Double whammy there of joys from Roland at the Toy Fair, which is in full force at Earl's Court at present. Ever been to a Toy Fair, Shaley? Ever sort of been appealed to?
No, but it sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'm pleased to see that they actually banned children between 5 and 15 from attending, because that makes perfect sense, really. So we adults can play with toys.
Well, they say adolescence now goes to about the age of 24, 25.
Yeah, but anyway, probably this level of maturity. Maybe we just never grow up. That's the important thing. And Jobbio's very own Stephen Quinn and Dee Murphy there explaining that you can always improve job prospects for both yourself and for companies you work with, and they can do the same. So it's great stuff. Still to come, we're going to be talking about the work of DNA specialists from consultant MyDNA. That would be Dr. Diren Bhatt, and of course, Dr. and CEO, Chief Executive Officer of MyDNA, Dr. Lior Rauchberger, who will be talking about the way in which fat genes might be taking place. That's GENE, as opposed to some sort of fashion statement, although I suppose the two are connected. We'll talk about DNA testing kits becoming more popular across the United Kingdom, and more in terms of deoxyribonucleic acid. And as promised last night, we'll be having an insight into Paddy Power's betting for the White House. Joe Lee will be talking about some of the slightly unusual bets that people are making about the Trump presidency, which is quite interesting. I mean, how soon it'll be before he'll be impeached, just one of the sort of aspects which will be worked our way through that whole process. So that's all on Siren Radio. Plus, we might even need to squeeze in another little aspect as well. I'm thinking maybe a touch of ABBA is suited. I mean, the first time
we've got a show,
bit of ABBA. Okay, take it away. Benny, Bjorn, Agneta, Anna Fried, Siren Radio welcomes you in every sense of the word. Voices growing louder and leading to all sorts of challenges. 71% of women that have dieted are currently unhappy with their weight, with one in five admitting they are constantly dieting. Over a third say it doesn't matter what they do, they can't lose weight, and 59% are yet to find a successful way to manage their weight. Shaylee, you've been commenting that you've known friends and colleagues who've had similar challenges, I presume. And
Definitely, yeah.
It's obviously not helping their quality of life and so on, but there may be some hope for serial dieters, as evidence suggests that DNA tests, course deoxyribonucleic acid, can reveal how your body uniquely responds to exercise, food and drink, and indeed whether an individual has the so-called fat gene. Now, to discuss this in further detail and to explore the whole connection between weight loss and DNA and our genes and so on, we're delighted to welcome two fabulous individuals. First of all, Dr. Leo Rauchberger, Chief Executive Officer at MyDNA. Good morning, Leo. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
And the equally wonderful Dr. Dhiren Bhatt, who's an Executive Consultant at MyDNA. Good morning, Dr. Bhatt.
Good morning.
Excellent. Leo, if we can come to you first, can you just talk to us a little bit about what this research has suggested? Because in some ways, people might be listening to this and saying, this is it. This is the moment I've been waiting for all my life. Finally, I can actually look at, you know, the line that it is all down to genetics. That's the reason. It's the low metabolism. That's what I need to actually lose weight successfully.
Yeah, absolutely, Alex. So look, the research is as we'd expect. Yeah, there's so much trial and error that goes on in today's life around dieting. You know, we try this diet, we try that diet. A lot of guesswork goes on, and hence the research is suggestive that many people struggle. They might lose a bit of weight initially, and they rebound a little bit later. And what we know with this new technology of DNA, and it's giving people information on what is the best and most optimal diet for their unique genetic profile. It's really personalising dieting based on what foods we may be better or worse off at processing.
Shaylee, you were saying that you know, your partner has a very high metabolism, you have a less high metabolism, your father's advice as a chef is to eat in moderation. Do you think this could be an ideal solution? Just get a MyDNA testing kit and you'll find out what's happening.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. And I think it's also like knowing your body and how your body actually breaks down energy and everything like that to leading to an...
Or breaks fat to form energy, or not as it can be.
To a healthier lifestyle.
Coming around to that fat gene, Dr. Bhatt, I mean, is it something where we are with DNA testing and so on and the uncoding of the molecules and so on, is it something we can say, yes, that's it, it's that combination of adenosine and cytosine and guanine and thymine that effectively that's causing the challenge?
Yeah, I think this is probably the most significant evidence that we have for genomic testing which supports weight management. So it's called the FTO gene, otherwise known as the fat gene, and it controls the way in which each individual differently responds to the satiation, in other words, the feeling of fullness. And it's controlled by a part of the brain called the hypothalamus, which controls many really important metabolic processes in the body. And depending on your genotype, i.e. the gene that we test for, you would either have a favorable, less favorable, or a least favorable result from this. And the way that the FTO gene has been researched, it shows that with an appropriate adjustment in diet, for example, some people do well if they have a less favorable result on the FTO gene, the fat gene, a high protein diet may be suitable for them. So genomic testing, along with seven other genes in this particular approach, can reveal an awful lot about the predisposition people have to weight accumulation, weight maintenance, and also weight loss.
Leo, returning to you, to yourself, I mean, obviously as Chief Executive Officer at MyDNA, it's that simple mouth swab which you can order online that you can find out from that point of view. I mean, talk us through the process in terms of how somebody who's listening to this would actually go about getting a DNA testing kit and effectively, either with Lloyd's Pharmacy or whomever, effectively finding out what their particular metabolism is actually saying about themselves.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So we've launched in the UK and it's exclusive with Lloyd's, so it's available both in-store and online. It's a really simple process. You effectively grab a little kit. It's like a small cardboard box, and in that box is a cheek swab. So it's a little brush that you swab in the inside of your cheek. It takes no more than 20 seconds. You put that into a postage-paid envelope, and that comes to our genetic laboratory. We will then analyse those genes associated with diet and weight loss, the ones that was just described, and then between 7 and 10 days later, you'll receive notification to say your results are ready. You do register before you put the swab into the reply paid envelope. You will register online, and you get a secure access, so you get the login to our the, secure portal. And as I say, when the results are ready, you'll get a notification that will basically show you all your results. It will give you, and it's very specific. We're not just focused on giving genetic results. We're very focused on telling people what to do with that information. We want to give people personalized and actionable information. So when you get access to the portal and the results, it will suggest what's the best diet for your body composition. It will give you serving sizes. It will also give you meal plans. And these are really personalized because we look at things like we look at your age, your gender, and most importantly, we look at your genetic profile and how you process these different foods.
Shaylee, does this appeal as a way of actually finding out more about ourselves, yourself, and so on?
It's sort of half and half because I'd be scared to find out if I had the fat gene or not.
Exactly.
But also, just speaking about sort of like diet and stuff, it's really, really interesting. I've had friends and people that I've known who have switched their diet to a vegetarian diet for their belief system. And it has resulted in like a lack of protein because they've just not been aware that obviously when you stop eating meat, you have to get a different source. And they don't know like what the different sources of protein are. So like lentils and nuts and stuff. And it's really, really surprising to find that not many people do know that and aren't aware of it.
Charlie, it's an interesting point you make. We're very conscious of that. So when you log onto your portal with your results, we make it very clear based on your results how much protein, carbs and fats you should have every day. And then we give specific suggestions around what should make up those proteins, for example. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned that you were a little bit concerned about learning if you have this fat gene. Well, you know, I did the test obviously some time ago, and I've always known that I graze a lot. Like I often have a second bowl of pasta at night for dinner and I don't necessarily need it. And unsurprisingly, my results showed that I did have not the best, I did have this fat gene, I didn't have the best version of it, I should say. So that's great. But then what then the evidence internationally then goes on to say, well, to help those people that have that to lose weight, so that they can lose weight as well as anybody else, but they need to go on a diet. The preferred diet is one that has a higher percentage of protein every day. So it's not necessarily telling people this is good or bad. There's no really bad genetic result. It's just arming people with some extra knowledge so they can make more informed decisions about their diet and their weight management.
Who would have thought when Crick and Watson and indeed Rosemary Franklin actually put together their DNA constructions and realised that double helix was there, here we are nearly about 70 or 80 years afterwards and thinking, it's all leading to this. Astounding. Websites to go to, obviously there's lloydspharmacy.com/mydna, which is where you can get the DNA, the MyDNA weight management DNA testing kit. In fact, it's actually an exclusive to Lloyd's Pharmacy, I see. So it's lloydspharmacy.com/mydna. Presumably, gentlemen, you'd also recommend mydna.life as a good source to actually find out more about MyDNA and the company and so on.
Yes, I think, Stieren, I think it's a really good way of people to be supported through the choices they make as well, because I think what's unique about this approach is not only what we offer on the website and through the portal once people have registered and bought the product, but the continuing support of updated information as it comes through, new plans for meal suggestions, and also new scientific evidence. Which also would be populated on the portal as we kind of build that into our algorithm for all our customers and our patients. But equally, I think it's really important that, you know, this is a unique offering through pharmacy, we believe, for the first time in the UK. Certainly, we believe that to be true in the whole of Europe, actually, that the first time that a genomic test is being offered through community pharmacy. And I think, you know, the access to a healthcare professional and other people seeking the same kind of advice is a really good support mechanism.
A win-win situation for the quality of life. Dr. Rauchberger and Dr. Bart, many, many thanks indeed. We trust you'll be able to join us again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of how MyDNA continues to provide us with information that can help improve our life qualities.
Welcome. Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having us.
We've come a long, long way together.
Back in the day when the elephant actually went off to town with a Trump, 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 little did we realise that a few decades later we'd be talking about a president of the same name. And indeed, what would the odds of that have been? Clearly, if you're talking about odds, then we're looking at bets on the current incumbent of the White House. The only place to go to is Paddy Power, and the only person to speak to is Joe Lee. How are you, Joe?
Hi, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. Now, this particular line, about 1 year since Donald Trump took on the mantle of being Commander-in-Chief of the United States of America. And it seems as though, you know, forget the bet in play and the notions of football and tennis and so on, political bets. This is where the action is, apparently.
That's it. Yeah, look, we've had pretty much since the 2016 US election and Donald Trump hitting the White House. It's been a perfect storm of political betting. At Paddy Power, we saw an opportunity to leverage his social media activity and everything else. And now we're engaging with our customers on a daily basis and giving them what they want, an array of Donald Trump markets.
I've heard a number of sort of folks saying that they were interested in the possible odds of within the next year or so having a Donald Trump presidency and a Boris Johnson prime ministership, you know, if only for the hairstyles alone. I mean, have you wind it up to encompass other politicians as yet, or is it a case of no, there's just so much fun with the Donald, that's all we stick with?
Well, look, when it comes to Donald, no 2 days are the same. I would say no 2 hours are the same. So a lot of it is concentrated on Trump himself. But we definitely have been working in some of the wider political world as well. So the likes of, obviously, the big one coming up, the royal wedding in the UK. Will he, won't he get an invite? That kind of thing. 10-1 to attend at the moment. And yeah, Boris, look, we'll have to see what Theresa May is doing. But our punters are telling us that it might not be Boris at the moment.
Yeah, well, I was intrigued to find that actually the bet on what shade Donald Trump's skin colour was going to be during the inauguration ceremony last year was actually cinnamon, which I thought was interesting. That sort of caught me slightly on the hop from that point of view. But again, it turned over a similar number of responses to the average tennis match, which is pretty intriguing, really. I mean, I suppose you could say that, well, you know, it's a new way of looking at politics and so on, and maybe engaging folk on the basis of you cannot be serious.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Look, we're seeing a new type of customer getting involved in political betting that we would never have seen before. So what Donald Trump has done, he's kind of crossed that divide between reality TV and politics, and all of a sudden people are as interested in betting on Donald Trump as they are in watching the Kardashians.
So roughly what kind of wages are being staked on this? I mean, is it five or is it ten, or is it, say, so I'll stake £5,000 on his nuclear button being bigger than Kim Jong-un's and so on?
So look, obviously the 2016 election was the biggest political betting event we've ever seen, and the most number of customers we've ever seen engage with a market. We paid out over £4.5 million when Trump actually got into office. Since then, look, we've had 350 markets, pretty much one for every day of his reign thus far. The most popular one where we're seeing the most activity is him to be impeached, yes, no. So right now, on average, people are staking in or around £60 on him to be impeached and just over £2 on him to not be impeached. So whether they're letting their heart rule their head, we don't know, but we'll see over the next 3 years, I suppose.
And presumably you've got check systems in place to ensure that Vladimir Putin isn't actually laying any bets from his own particular perspective, because that'd be a whole new political issue.
We do have checks and balances in place, yeah. We can definitely keep an eye on things like that.
So what about bizarre bets? I mean, we've already talked about the notion of impeachment, and you would have thought, wow, this is an and interesting. How crazy does it actually get? What's the weirdest line of people taking? I mean, I was astounded to find that we were talking about a surgical enhancement of his particular crown jewels at one stage.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. Now, personally, I delegated the responsibility of of researching.
Good
that
choice,
one,
Joe.
So,
yeah.
That's not one you want on your.
No,
you
don't want to actually literally sort of be even seen to kind of sort of be following that particular one through. But I like the one about whether he would actually commission an addition to Mount Rushmore and actually become a fifth presidential face up there.
That's it, yeah, 66-1. We've seen a bit of interest there. And when it comes to the Donald, you have to expect the unexpected. So realistically, people are sitting at home going, yeah, there's a possibility that might actually happen. We've also had some interest in the 500-1 about him to paint the White House gold. And, you know, gold is his favourite colour. And again, not beyond the bounds of possibility.
Of course, it would probably technically then be the Gold House, which would change things entirely. Maybe just get move into Fort Knox. In terms of influence from that point of view, is kind of manifesting across the board? I mean, are we going to be looking? I mean, clearly, you know, two big stories last year, politically, Brexit and the continuing sort of line of Donald Trump and so on. I mean, are we kind of seeing sort of people saying, yes, actually, Brexit will never happen, or yes, it will, or yeah, oh no, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I think where Donald steps in versus Brexit is, if you try and read some of the documentation about Brexit, it's just boring. It's really heavy. If you want to be put to sleep at night, take out five or six pages about what they're trying to do with Brexit, and you'll nod off pretty quickly. Our customers are getting involved, tweeting us, you know, requesting these types of Donald Trump markets, and they're a little bit tongue-in-cheek, they're entertaining, and it's the kind of stuff that makes them laugh. They want to kind of get away from the serious side of things as well. That's what we're seeing.
How many average tweets will he put together in the course of the next period of time?
Yeah, we have. So he averages about 70, just over 70 tweets a week. And, and we have one of our more popular markets in the last year has been the weekly over-under on number of tweets he'll put out.
So should people actually wish to find out further details? I mean, it seems like a done deal. Obviously, we go to Paddy Power. But Joe, would you like to point us in the right direction?
Personally, when I'm asked this question for the last number of months, I think the odds on him not being impeached are probably the most appealing. Around even money, not going to make you fortunes, and you're going to have to wait for 3 years. But it certainly looks that people are overbetting that just based on the negativity on the likes of social media. They're being influenced, and it's shaping their perception of things. So I think that's where I put my money at the minute.
You see, I'm looking forward to Cheltenham and the wonderful sort of horse racing that takes place there. I mean, Joe, when you were given this assignment, did you think, great, fantastic, forget Cheltenham, I'm just going to focus on Donald Trump for the next few months?
That's it, yeah, sure. You can imagine me back in university there going, what more could I want to do with my life than follow Donald Trump
exactly.
Actively on Twitter day in, day out.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising. She'll find the note I left hanging on her door. She'll laugh when she reads the part that says I'm leaving. 'Cause I've left that girl so many times before. By the time I make Albuquerque, she'll be working. She'll probably stop at lunch and give me a call. But she'll just hear that phone keep on ringing. Off the wall. That's all. By the time I make Oklahoma, she'll be sleeping. She'll turn softly and call my name out low. and she'll cry just to think I'd really leave her. Though time and time I've tried to tell her so, she just didn't know I would really go.
By the time I get to Phoenix, Glen Campbell, it'll be time for another edition of the Midweek Drive on Siren Radio. This has been the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Thanks to... who should we thank, Shaley? Oh, thank you, obviously, Shaley McKenzie.
Aww, no, well,
we'll clearly thank Phil Leonis. We thank Richard Fitzwilliams. It's their show, let's face it,
nice.
For at least 20 minutes. Ian Lennox, thanks to Roland from the International Toy Fair taking place at Earls Court at this moment. Dr. Leo Rauchberger, Dr. Diren Bart, Dee Murphy, Stephen Quinn from Jobbio, and Joe Lee, who we just heard from Paddy Power talking about the Donald Trump presidency. Later on today, we've got another fantastic past prologue that follows Chris Clarkson on Drive Time between 5 and 7. Then you've got past prologue talking this month about royal marriages across the ages.
Mm.
I think it's very good.
It's just come out about Eugenie.
Well, Princess Eugenie, just in time, of course, for promoting the royal marriage piece for Past Prologue this very evening on Siren Radio. So a win-win situation on that.
I wonder who's going to get married first.
It's going to be fantastic. Back next week, of course, with the Midweek Drive, Richard Edwards from SFX Magazine, a whole heap of other goodies as well. And next Thursday morning on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, Shaley will be back, all being well, as a specialist coffee soul from Lincoln.
I'm excited for this. Yeah,
Susie will be joining us and it'll all be magic. To take us up to the news, let me see a bit of Isaac Gracie and then Pink and Beautiful Trauma. So that is us effectively saying farewell, auf Wiedersehen, so long, goodbye, or whatever else they used to say in Sound of Music in some sort of wonderful paraphernalia way based way. You'll be listening to Siren Radio. What should we say to go out with? Should we say bonjour? Should we say, I like the European thing, should we say Das Vidanya? Shall we actually say Auf Wiedersehen?
Das Vidanya.
Yeah, we'll keep Russian World Cup, of course, this year, so that's always good. All right, okay, a one, two, three.
Das Vidanya.